Yeah, how we gonna kick it? What's up, folks? Pete Davidson here. Rotobahn podcast time, little impromptu episode on a Wednesday. As I mentioned yesterday, if I didn't totally get demolished playing last night, I was going to maybe throw a quick podcast out. And hey, I actually made it through my match. At my age, there are some doubts when you're coming off a long layoff. I was sort of wondering if I would be able to jump at all and all that shit. But made it through a couple games, didn't get hurt, which is like a win in and of itself. My team won too, which is nice. Hopefully you guys had some good Tuesday night results. I picked up a couple copies of Alan Lazard, picked up a couple Josh Olivers, we'll see where that goes from here. So what we're doing here today, just going to go through some news a couple trade target ideas, couple comments on some things, nothing major. As I said in the intro, that was the Beastie Boys bringing us in with Root Down, which is a song that they sort of generated by sampling off of Jimmy Smith, one of my favorite jazz musicians, who passed away back in, I think, 2005. Root Down was a song he composed in the early 70s from the album of the same name. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to close this podcast out with his long version, the jazz version of the song. So get a little taste of both ends on that one. Hey, keep leaving me comments on the music bumpers. I enjoy putting them on either end of the pod, and let me know when you like them, when you don't. Not that it's going to change what I'm doing there, but it's always nice to know what you guys think. And we got a lot to actually talk about here, so hopefully this will be in the 30-minute area, but it could extend a little further, depending on how long-winded I get here. So let's just sort of go through some news and notes, stuff that's going on. Kamar is dealing with that high ankle thing, and you know, the fact that they went out and they're sort of rehearsing some running backs maybe to come in, it leads me to believe that maybe Kamara could miss a game. So that means that those of us who went out and grabbed Latavius Murray or who have Murray could really have something this week. Obviously, the matchup is mediocre. The good news, though, there is that, you know, Murray is pretty, you know, he's run against the Bears before. It's not going to be culture shock for him, and he's running behind a good offensive line. So I think there could be some success there if Murray gets the full juice this week. I definitely think he's worth an RB2 play. Man, Jalen Ramsey is a Ram. Holy crap. That's really big if you own the Rams defense, in my opinion. This is a guy who tilts the field defensively. So the Rams defense just got really good. If you can get some sort of unsuspecting rube to allow you to acquire them on the cheap, that is, that's pretty solid. And the Jaguars D just became a whole lot less scary in general. They still got some good athletes, but wow, that's... Wow. On the other side, they did get enough for him where you can sort of understand what they're doing. I'm not a big fan of this players forcing trade stuff. It just doesn't fit with football. It makes the sport worse when you've got players changing teams mid-season because it's just not good for cohesiveness. But looking at this thing sort of in a vacuum, you know, Jacksonville did pretty well, I think, considering what they gave up. Chris Thompson's got some turf toe. Now, yesterday I was talking about how that may relate to Bryce Love. I haven't heard anything about this being good for Love or him coming back. They may just want to redshirt him. So this could be a shot for my old guy, a guy that we've liked over the years, Wendell Smallwood, who's a nice, diverse back. He could be a guy who gets some juice over the next couple weeks if Thompson misses time. So that's sort of worth noting. Ryan Tannehill, new quarterback in Tennessee. You know what? I mean, look, we'll see how that works. He's a little bit more conventional than Mariota. He's a little bit more of a timing thrower than Mariota. He's also a pretty mediocre quarterback. So, you know, in some ways this is going to be better. In some ways it's going to be worse. I think some of this, one of the things I'm going to watch here is Tannehill himself. He's a guy where, you know, the layoff could actually have helped him. He could use some time to just get his body right. He's been through so much below the waist with the knees. So, you know, if his mobility is back where it was pre-injury, and I didn't see it as being such last time we saw him in Miami. So I'm interested to watch Tannehill. I've got an open mind. Maybe he could ignite the passing game because, again, in some ways, he's not as good a quarterback in Mariota, but in some ways, he's more conventional and he's a better timing thrower. Could be better for the receivers. I want to watch this one with an open mind, see how they play. But if they don't change the way they play at all, then I don't see how this helps them. So, I have some hope that this moves the Titans more towards conventional football, which could be a good thing, even though I'm not a big Mariota hater, as you guys know. What else do we want to hit here? Kenneal Harry, designated to return. Now, that's big. He definitely is a guy who should be rostered in bigger leagues. But he is still facing a numbers game. If the other three guys are healthy, I'm not sure how he's going to make a big impact here. But still, something worth noting. And in bigger leagues, you never know. Travaris Cadet meeting with New Orleans, another sign. I don't care about Travaris Cadet. I'm not going anywhere near him. But, another sign that maybe we might lose Kamara for a week. So that's something to sort of keep an eye on. Philip Dorsett practicing as it relates to Jacoby Myers and as it relates to Kenneal Harry. If Dorsett's healthy, I think his role is pretty locked in. I think he plays an important part of that offense. The fact that it's a hamstring, that makes it good news that he's practicing. So that's most of the news and notes. The Jets activated Herndon the other day. That's good. He could play this week, but I think if he doesn't play this week, I think he's a pretty near lock to return week 8. So Herndon's going to be there for us over the second half. Not the payoff, when we wanted it, but at least it's still probably going to come in. Interesting note, along with Jalen Ramsey, Marcus Peters goes to the Ravens. Obviously not as big an upgrade, but it does put another playmaker on the back end for the Ravens, and they needed one. So this really, I think, does help their defense. Not a ton, but I think it helps their defense. On the Giants, Saquon Barkley and Evan Ingram both practicing. That bodes well for them returning this week. It's weird. I think last week Barkley not coming back is not shocking. But if he doesn't play this week, I have to say that the stuff we were watching in that video, you really have to wonder about the wisdom of him beating on his ankle like that if he wasn't ready to do any cutting at all. I think Barkley was kept out last week probably more for caution than anything else. I think he's likely to play this week. Same thing with Evan Ingram in terms of his likeliness to play this week. And it's really important in Ingram's case because the matchup is just outstanding. Cardinals have just been getting absolutely roasted by tight ends. And, not only are the Cardinals a good matchup for tight ends, as I was reading in Pat Thorman's Pace article, they're like the fastest team in terms of pace from a neutral standpoint. They're fourth in plays per game, and their games average the fourth most combined snaps. So, the team playing the Cardinals will be up in pace, generally speaking, as well. So the Giants really look good this week. And both the Giants and the Cardinals tend to give up chunk plays, another thing Thorman mentioned. So a lot of good action, I think, could be there for us in Arizona at the Giants this week. So, obviously we're definitely going to be firing up our Giants, Golden Tate, Sterling Shepard, all that stuff. And really, again, this game is just working well on both sides. Look at the Giants have had some success, but look at what's happened when they faced, just reasonably good quarterbacks. Dak Prescott lit them up. Josh Allen had a decent game against them. Winston lit them up. Cousins had a good game. Brady had a good game. These guys are giving up good games to quarterbacks. The Giants are giving up good games to quarterbacks. So, really like this game from both sides. I like the potential for the teams to sort of fire each other up. This thing could get fast-paced. Obviously, Shermer always is reason for concern, but this is definitely one of my favorite games on the slate. The Cardinals' run defense is terrible. They're 22nd yards per carry, 26 in yards per carry, and their pass D is worse. Giants are, bottom third in pass defense, and they're not very good at stopping the run. There's just nothing that these defenses are doing well, and these offenses both really have plenty of ways to get this thing going. So it's just hard to see the Giants Cardinals game. I don't know. Right now, I'm having trouble imagining it doing anything but hitting the over. And I'm really surprised at the 49 over-under. I think this thing's going over 50 pretty easily. Well, maybe not easily. I mean, it's never easy to get to 50, but I think there's a better chance it goes over than stays under. The other big game, I think, on the slate this week that people are going to be into, and in this one, I feel like the over-under might be a little high. Of course, that might depend on the status of Jalen Ramsey, but the Rams are at 28-plus. The Falcons are at 25-plus. That game's going over 50. It's at 54.5 right now, and if Jalen Ramsey's, air quote, back injury heals up for this game, I think the Falcons might have trouble hitting that number. So this is going to be an interesting game, and it's one that's going to evolve throughout the week because we'll find out, you know, what the Rams defense is going to look like. But, you know, one thing, I mean, and I don't want to write the Falcons off too badly here, because even if Ramsey is on the field for the Rams, say he can take out Julio Jones, the Falcons have a lot of other ways they can hurt you, especially with Hooper stepping up and Ridley and Sanu. So, and we know Matt Ryan sometimes is actually better when he lets Julio tilt the field and he throws away from him. So, there, you know, this game definitely could work out for both teams. The Rams obviously aren't playing particularly well, playing better on defense than offense at this time. But, you know, the Falcons definitely are kind of, you know, they're a get-well matchup right now for any passing game. So it seems to me that this game definitely has a chance to go shootout just because, you know, I mean, the Rams obviously haven't looked good, but the thing that's really been giving them trouble is, you know, they can't stand the heat. Goff's under too much pressure. He doesn't have a ton of mobility or a big arm, and he's struggling. But nobody brings, well, few teams bring less heat with the pass rush than the Falcons. So this, to me, seems like a game where the Rams, even though they're on the road, they struggle on the road. It's an indoor game. It's a good environment. It's a fast track. And, you know, I feel like the Rams' lack of a pass rush, excuse me, the Falcons' lack of a pass rush could make this game go ham. So, you know, those are two games I'm already in on. Obviously, it doesn't take a genius to figure out these two games we're going to be focusing on this week. But I just wanted to touch a little bit of DFS. I haven't really heard from you guys a whole lot in terms of how you're doing with the plays we've been putting out every week in the DFS pod. I've been basically using those plays in my lineups for the most part. You know, I mean, sometimes lineup construction will take you in a different direction occasionally to, you know, so I might have to give up one of my favorite plays of the week to get a different one in, that kind of thing. But and this is very unexciting to say, but I'm up about, you know, somewhere between like 30 and 40 bucks on the year, which really means I'm basically about break even. And for me, as I've said many times, my DFS philosophy is if I can just keep myself in the game, keep playing aggressive tournament lineups alongside my cash lineups and try to come out, you know, each week roughly, you know, down a little, up a little, you know, somewhere near the break-even point, to me, that's actually winning because it allows me to stay in the game. You know, a lot of big-time DFS players, when I've talked to them privately, have said, you know, the way you play DFS is, you know, maintain some profitability or break even. So when the big weeks hit, they make sure that you're, you know, you're up. You know, you play 17 weeks on the season. If you stay even for the most part and just have one big week, you had a great season. So, you know, that's, to me, that's the way you play the game. You learn to play at a level where you're not losing money and you stay aggressive in GPPs every week, and eventually a lineup hits, and you end up, you know, up a significant amount in the year. You know, where I don't want to go is where I was at a couple of years ago, where I was playing really aggressive tournaments, and on some weeks I would be profitable, but on other weeks I would lose everything, and it was sort of an up-and-down ride. It almost becomes sort of emotional and tilting. I have to say I enjoy the way I've been playing the last year and a half a lot more, and I'm having more success. And I'd be interested to know how you guys are doing with the materials as well. So if you have positive or negative feedback, please hit me up on Twitter. Let me know how it's going. And, you know, the other thing I wouldn't mind finding out from you guys, as I mentioned last week, do you prefer the early Sunday morning pod or the Saturday podcast? If you guys have a preference, I might try to sort of lean one way or the other on most weeks. Obviously, sometimes my schedule will dictate. Okay, let's move away from DFS here. Let's hit a couple more of these things I had lined up for the show. Cole Beasley is currently on Hermsmeyer's buy low model. And you guys know I agree. I've been sort of pimping Beasley all year. Here's the reason I think the Hermsmeyer thing is, you know, is worth talking about. Obviously, for DFS, we always want to know who's on the buy low model because that thing tends to pop. But, if you guys remember, a couple, maybe it's a month ago at this point, but I don't know, but a couple weeks back, I talked about Beasley not just being this PPR guy who's going to give you that dependable handful of points. He is a guy who can bust out for big games. And according to Hermsmeyer, he's sort of due for one. So, you know, he'll be a guy I'm looking at this weekend in DFS. Now, speaking of buy low, let's go with a couple buy low, sell high ideas. This isn't a buy low, sell high pod per se, but let's talk a couple, just a couple guys I'm sort of thinking about. Christian Kirk, I think people are probably starting to forget about him a little because he's missed some time now. But assuming he comes back healthy, and it sounds like he will, I think he's a really good buy low trade target. Again, if you can buy low, I don't want to pay full freight on a guy with an injury, but if somebody with a bye week's got an itchy trigger finger and you can get him for a lesser player right now, I like that quite a bit. And another guy I think, and this is a guy that, I should have been higher on, but I've been a little slow to accept the 49ers goal line paradigm, but it sure seems like Tevin Coleman's the goal line back now. It looks like this is basically going to be a timeshare between Coleman and Breida, with the other guys mixing in here and there, but basically it's going to be Coleman, Breida, with Coleman getting the goal line. That makes him the more valuable back there. Before this becomes just really sort of a postulate where it's just common knowledge, Coleman might be a guy you can get on the cheap right now, and he's probably a guy who can be a solid RB2 for you the rest of the way. Not a high-end one, but a solid one. And here's another thing I was thinking about. We've been talking about the Patriots defense. Hack and I have been talking a lot about them on the show. We talked about the preseason. Hack's looking good on his prediction that this might be the best Patriot defense of the entire Belichick run. I still don't really agree with that. I think that's a little bit too far. But having said that, this is one hell of a defense. The question we're thinking about here is, where are we at with the value of this defense right now? Now, let's look at this thing, okay? We knew it was a really good defense going in. I'm not saying that the Patriot defense is going to start tanking. Not at all. I think they're going to be a good defense all the way through the year. But let's look at reality here. Let's throw out Pittsburgh on opening night. Since then, during this air quote epic run, because it hasn't been an epic run, folks. Let's be honest. They've been beating up on the dregs of the NFL. Patriots are an outstanding defense. They're going to be one of the best defenses in football all the way through. But we're talking about fantasy here. And the fantasy angle is that this is a really good defense that's played the dregs of the league. And it's led to some remarkable fantasy point production. But here's the thing. Yeah, they're still a great defense. But this run of just awful opponents is over. It's over. Because you're not playing the Luke Falk Jets this week. You're playing the Darnold Jets. It's different. Next week, Baker Mayfield. Then you're playing the Ravens. Then the Eagles, the Cowboys, the Texans, the Chiefs, okay? Finally, when we get to week 15, we get the Bengals and we get the Bills. So this is an interesting schedule, right? Because if you're an elite playoff-type team, you want the Patriot defense. You should keep them. If you're, 5-1 right now, or 6-0, or 4-2, and you've got the Patriot defense, and you think you're a team that's got a really good chance at a bye week, and your playoffs are only going to be weeks 15 and 16, you keep the Patriots, because you're going to be really loving that Bengals and Buffalo matchups week 15 and 16. But if you've got the Patriot defense, and you're 3-3, and you've got people going, hey, what do you want for the Patriot defense? And they've been putting up these incredibly ridiculous point totals. Well, guess what? They're going to be putting up good point totals going forward. They're going to be one of the best defenses out there, but they're not going to be setting world records anymore. Because, again, bad quarterback play leads to ridiculous point totals. Well, guess what? They played the Dolphins, the Falk Jets, Allen, who we know Belichick has his number, the Redskins, and then they played, the Giants, and quite frankly, against the Giants, they had some good fortune to get those big numbers. It's not going to be that way against the Jets this week. They'll have a good week. They're going to get some sacks. They may get the turnover, but you can't count on it like you could a couple weeks ago. So right now, if someone's offering you something really good for a Patriot, for the Patriot defense, and you can figure out a way to have a good defense after the deal, like they'll give you their defense back, and their defense is pretty good, I think this is something to explore. Again, we're talking about getting a really serious something here. I want a second receiver or an RB2. Like, I want something that changes my lineup significantly for the better. Otherwise, you know, they can go suck on it. But, it, you know, the paradigm is very interesting here, because if you need to do something to ignite your team, you could move the Patriot defense right now and get a lot for them. But again, if you're one of those teams where you're looking like a bye team, Patriots are absolutely a hold, man. I want that matchup on the road at Cincy, and then I want Josh Allen at home. So the Patriot defense, very interesting horses for courses kind of team here. Depending on where you're at, you might be able to use them one way or the other. And right about now, there it is. The real root down is kicking in. So we're sort of nearing the end of the pod. This song's like 10 minutes long, so we still got a couple more topics to hit. And next guy up is Steph Diggs, coming off a monster game. And for those of you who were trying to sell him a couple weeks back and didn't, you're welcome. Look, the whole point with Diggs, the reason we didn't want to panic sell 2 weeks ago, is because great players will have a big game. You know it's going to happen. So here's my advice. Sell Diggs yesterday. Sell him immediately. Look, will he have more big games? Yeah. In fact, he could have big games week 8 and 9. So if you want to try to sell him week 10 or something, okay, I could sort of see that. Personally, I'm going to try to sell right now off of the monster game. There's a decent chance that Detroit, you know, shuts Diggs down. They've got good cornerbacks. They're playing good defense. And they're a team like the Vikings, where they like to slow the game down. We can end up with a slog this week, and people are like, oh, it was just an aberration. So for my money, if I had an itchy trigger finger with Diggs and I didn't do it, the time is now. But just one word on this whole thing. I'm not saying get rid of Steph Diggs. We're talking about selling high. So I want full Diggs value. I want, you know, mid to late third round value. If I can't get that, screw it. I'll keep Diggs. Because again, I think I'll probably have another sell window around week 10. But I think moving Diggs at full value right now to somebody who thinks, oh, now I can get Steph Diggs now that he's hot, I love it. Because we still have the same bad paradigm in Minnesota. We still have a team that doesn't want to throw, you know? So for what it's worth, I think you sell high on Diggs right now. But again, we sell high. That doesn't mean giving the player away. It's really important to understand what sell high means. Sell high is a concept. It means locking in value. So I want to get, obviously, we're not going to sell him at his week 6 value. Nobody's going to give you, you know, no one's going to, you'd have to get Christian McCaffrey for that. But you can now sort of sell him at his weekly average or a little bit above. And I think this is good timing. So the idea is you sell at a price where if Diggs stays hot, you don't even feel bad about it. Like, that's a sell high. All right. Anyway, let's move on. Next guy on the list is Zay Jones. This is probably where a lot of people will stop listening to the podcast. Look, Zay Jones is not a special talent, but I think he's one of those guys where sometimes it happens slowly. He's had, you know, some swimming with the scheme here or there. I like the Raiders scheme for Zay Jones. He's a guy who does a lot of good short area work. He's a good route guy. His hands are better than we've seen. I do think when he relaxes and feels wanted on a team, he can do a lot better. He fits the scheme and the quarterback in Oakland. But bigger than those two things are just the fact that this I mean, it's a target vacuum in Oakland. If this guy shows well, he could end up getting 6, 7, 8 targets a game. It wouldn't surprise me at all. And you can have this guy for nothing. He's free right now. So for me, go grab Zay Jones right now. Stick him on the end of your bench. Maybe you can play him in full PPR leagues if you need an option. But I think he's going to actually be a pretty good player for the Raiders. Look, it requires a little bit of faith. But, you know, I know this guy's done some shaky things off the field, and he's had some yips with the hands. But this guy is sort of like Tyler Boyd in that at some point, remember, people had Tyler Boyd left for dead like a year or so ago. Left for dead. So, you know, sometimes with these receivers, it takes a little time. And again, I'm not saying Zay Jones is going to change your life this year. I'm saying he's a guy with plenty of upside in this new situation who is currently basically free. That's the point. I saw Alex Smith was practicing this morning or working on the side. I just, you know, real simple. Alex Smith, I want you to enjoy the rest of your life. You've got millions of dollars in the bank. You are a solid NFL player. But man, don't go playing NFL football anymore. Please don't. you're not a game changer. You're not going to go out there and reframe your career or anything like that. You're probably going to get hurt again. So, you know, I really hope Alex Smith doesn't go out with that leg that was in like 16 pieces and try to play football. I really hope these guys, we really want our guys to become smarter than that. You know, this is a game where retiring from the NFL needs to feel like winning. We need to make these guys feel like they're winning when they retire, because really, they are. You know, these guys are rich, and we want them to be able to enjoy their life. You know, Alex Smith, you left it all on the field. Don't come back. Anyway, moving on. I saw an interesting thing from Silva on Twitter. Christian McCaffrey outscoring all other fantasy running backs by in excess of 7 PPR points per game. Damn, that is pretty crazy. Speaking of crazy, Austin Eckler owners seem to be a little bit on tilt. And look, I mean, look, it's understandable. And I have an Eckler team too. I know what it's like. But look, we were getting high-end round one production out of our fifth or sixth round pick for a while there, and it put us in really good position. But come on, we've already got more than we paid for out of this player. He's going to be a solid flex RB2 the rest of the way. If Melvin Gordon gets dinged up, Eckler might get back in there and start doing RB1 stuff again. But let's accept certain realities, okay? And obviously, you know, since Gordon came back, he's not exactly ripping it up. He's had like 20 carries for 50 yards or whatever. But this is a guy coming off a layoff, so let's give him the benefit of the doubt to some degree. I mean, this is Melvin Gordon. This guy's been a pretty good football player over a long period of time. And let's also be fair with Eckler's performance. I mean, he was averaging under 4 yards a carry. Now, yards per carry is not really a great stat. It's a team stat. But I think there's something to the fact that at light workloads, this is a 5 yards per carry player. When we start giving him heavier workloads, it goes down. And we saw that a little bit last year, too. Now, granted, he was dinged up. So I think we should be fair to Eckler. I don't think that, you know, the 3.8 yards a carry isn't reflective of what kind of back he is. I think it's reflective more of the Chargers situation. But then, to some degree, Gordon's problems are reflective of that as well. They've got two good running backs. They're going to split time. Gordon's the bigger back. He's 215 pounds. Eckler's like 200 pounds soaking wet. It's going to go back to roughly the old split, probably a little bit closer. A little bit tilted towards Eckler than in the past, just because he's played so well. But, I mean, are we really going to sit there and complain about this every week? I mean, come on. I mean, this is just reality. Melvin Gordon's going to be the guy who's getting more snaps and probably more touches. It's reality. It's not going to change. And really, I mean, it shouldn't change. Melvin Gordon is the big back. He's the lead back. Eckler's the change of pace. Now, is Eckler a special change of pace guy? Sure. Should he get more than he's getting right now? Maybe. And, you know, who knows? Maybe Eckler will be the lead back next year. Maybe they're going to let Gordon go. I mean, we don't know. But the idea that, you know, the Chargers are just going to, like, stick Melvin Gordon on the bench because Austin Eckler's been winning people fantasy games, you know, which is, you know, that's not totally fair. I think I'm shortchanging the arguments people are making to some extent. But on some level, that's sort of what people are asking for. Fantasy is not reality. And, you know, Eckler was playing really well, but he wasn't doing well as an early down runner. So, you know, will Gordon come in and change that? I don't know. I mean, the Chargers are pretty banged up. But giving the, you know, letting him do the heavy workload between the tackles type stuff and letting Eckler still get, you know, his targets, I think is, you know, that's a pretty reasonable way to go about it. And the targets have been, you know, last week 4 is a little low, but 16 the week before. So it seems to me that they still have designs for Eckler. Let's not freak out over a short sample. You know, what the Chargers need to do is get their offense going. So, you know, a rising tide can lift all boats or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I mean, to me, that's really going to be the defining thing here. Not so much the role. I think we know what the roles are going to be. It's pretty obvious what the roles are going to be. The question is, can this team get its act together? Can they start playing better football? Now, we've seen them do it over the years, even when they get all kinds of banged up. I mean, this offensive line gets banged up, it seems like, every single year. So I don't think it's time to give up on the Chargers. Now, this week and next week are going to be tough. The matchups are bad. And Green Bay week 9, probably not so great either. But after that, Oakland, KC, Denver, Jacksonville without Ramsey, Oakland again week 16. There's some good stuff coming up for the Chargers. So I don't think this is a give-up situation. I think what we need is for the team to start playing better. I think maybe, you know, after the next couple weeks, these guys are going to be nice buys because they're probably going to have a little more short-term struggle. Anyway, that was long-winded. My apologies. Sometimes I think we waste too much time tilting on reality. Just accept reality here, folks. It'll help you clean your head and make better decisions going forward. So we're going to wrap up this podcast now. Moving towards the end here. Root Down is winding down. So just a couple little business points here. Again, I'm not really asking you guys for donations at this point. As I said throughout the summer, what I really want here is when the season's over, folks who felt like they got something out of Rotobon, you know, give us a tip at the end of the meal kind of thing. So no need for people to make donations now unless you feel compelled to do so. We're not going to turn down money. But again, we're looking for sort of tips here. And let's let this thing play out. Let's see how we do. Let's see if we earn our money. So, you know, feel free to save those donations till later. If you do want to help out Rotobon and the pod in the interim, leave us a review. They always help. If you have a second, leave a sentence. Tell me what you like about the podcast. If you're not in mind to leave a 5-star review, I would really like to know why. Tell me on Twitter. Let me know what's going on with the podcast that you don't like. Who knows? If it's a good idea, maybe I'll do something about it. But once again, we're wrapping things up here. That's going to do it for this special pop-up Wednesday edition of the Rotobon podcast. I will see all y'all over the weekend with all the traditional stuff that we got going. And hey, having fun this year. I hope you guys are too.
And that was Root Down. Root Down and get it. Thank you.